for his living soul. Searches places that he don't wanna go. Looks for love and for hope.
Good evening, and welcome to What the World Needs Now, with host Ken Johnston. Stay tuned as Ken talks with authors, journalists, and others regarding topics important to us as Catholics in a world that's in desperate need of God's love.
Love that comforts from heaven above.
And welcome to What the World Needs Now, and this is your host, Ken Johnston. I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. Both your prayerful and financial support that's kept us on the air for over 40 years allows me to be here on Wednesdays for a couple hours and try to help us all learn what it is that God wants us to know about our Christian and Catholic faith. So, welcome. I am joined today with a great guest, Teresa Llaneros, and she's a degreed journalist and devout Catholic, is dedicated to addressing the growing trend of disaffiliation with religion, where many turn to spiritual but not religious ideologies, leading to New Age and occult practices. Earlier in her career, Llaneros was a successful author and speaker, exploring modern American spiritualism and attempting to reconcile it with Christianity before experiencing a radical deliverance from occult deception. Now she coaches ex-New Agers returning to Christ and provides Catholics with the tools to resist cultural traps through her growing ministry of online resources, classes, YouTube, and her blog, Spirit Sanctified. Teresa helps Christians stand firm against deception. In her book that we're going to talk about, Freedom from Darkness, she offers a practical roadmap that explains how people become ensnared in the occult and provides a path to freedom through repentance, conversion, and the sacraments. Welcome to the show, Teresa. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, and one of the things that struck me in the bio was where you talk about spiritual but not religious, and it strikes me because in recovery programs, 12-step programs, you know, we often refer to whatever it was that we were addicted to as the demon, and then when so many people get into recovery, we hear so many times that I'm spiritual, not religious, and it drives me crazy. And it was probably just 6 months ago or so, I was with a group of people in recovery, all of whom were Catholic. We get together at least once a month, sometimes more frequently, and to share about our faith in light of recovery. And all of a sudden, it came to me, and I blurted out, you know, spirituality is for people who want to define God, who God is, and religion is for people that accept the definition of God. And, you know, so many people I know go down this spirituality route, and they make up who their God is, and it's usually a God that allows them to continue to perform certain acts or continue in certain sinful behaviors because it's not as bad as what they did when they were doing drugs or drinking alcohol or gambling or whatever it was that they were addicted to. So I found it interesting that it's right there in the beginning of your bio. And I think in your case, it's something that probably leads to the occult, right?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because actually at this point, 28% of Americans classify themselves as spiritual but not religious. But I think if you get down into the core of it, unfortunately, I think a lot of these people have church hurt. They've gone through something when they were growing up or whatever age they were at where they had some bad experience in a church or even potentially with people at the church. And so they want to detach themselves from maybe harm even that they've experienced at the hands of other Christians. And so there's some hurt that we're dealing with, I think, societally. And the danger in that is that oftentimes what happens is people will throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, and then they go off into the world thinking that they can define spirituality in any sort of way. But what is the problem with that is that because of the internet and just how pervasive the New Age and the occult has become, it's just sort of there waiting for people to discover. And so it kind of becomes that beginning path for people They become disaffiliated from religion, and then they pretty quickly and through many different pitfalls can trip and fall into New Age beliefs that lead into these practices that are actually very spiritually dangerous.
And it looks like quite a few people have. Right in the introduction of the book, you say why I wrote this book. And there's a mention that TikTok's witch hashtag has received nearly 20 billion views. Witch TikTok has nearly 2 billion views. And baby witch, which is a hashtag for those new to the craft, has more than 600 million views. That's incredible.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of times people are really looking for some way to feel like they have control over their life or even agency over their lives. And so when they're looking to these practices like witchcraft, they even seem benign. When you're dealing with things like crystals or manifestation or law of attraction, these sorts of things even Christians can engage in thinking it's not that big of a deal. And so you get into what I call the blend or syncretism. But what these things are, they're basically paths of idolatry, getting people's eyes off of God and placing it on the self, thinking that a person has some form of control over their lives instead of the truth, which is that God is sovereign over our lives. And when we come under that surrender and that headship and authority of Christ, it actually helps us, I think, to find peace in our surroundings and our suffering in these ways. That would be like a Christian worldview. But on the other side, people that have detached themselves from religion and they're looking to the New Age or the occult, they are really grounding into their lives in a way that puts the self at the center, and it leads to really a narcissistic way of living that's based on a lot of different distortions of thought, thinking that they can actually do witchcraft and it's going to have some impact on their surroundings, which just in the least is distorted thinking. But unfortunately, these practices also open one up to the demonic. And so you can have circumstances where they're actually calling demons into the situation. And then you can actually have situations of demonic oppression when the person tries to get freed of the practices. And we are seeing that even more and more as people are getting involved in these things. And luckily, Jesus is pulling people out in droves, but still we're having to deal with helping people out of spiritual issues that actually do and can come from these practices.
Yeah. I know in some of the other shows I've done here, I've had Monsignor Rossetti, who's an exorcist, and people are familiar with Father Ripperger and maybe Carlos Martins. And it seems to be something that we talk about a lot more than we did when I was a kid. I'm in my early 60s, and I even with my wife, sometimes when I have shows that where the topic of Satan or demons or any of that comes up, and I'll go home and, you know, over dinner, you know, I'll start to bring it up, and she's like, "What did I tell you? We don't mention that in this house." And you know, she grew up in a house where just by invoking the name of Satan or mentioning the demons was like an invitation for them to come in. And I don't think that's the case, although the only way they can get in is through invitation, right?
I think that there can be some superstition around how the demonic works, and I'm not throwing shade at that because a lot of Christians ask me questions around that, and I think that I can give an example. I was talking to someone the other day, and they were asking me if it would be advisable for them to drive down the road and go to the New Age shop and pray a rosary outside the New Age shop. They said, "Is there something bad that's going to happen to me?" And I said, "Well, why do you think something bad would happen to you?" You know, and I kind of asked them questions around their worldview and their fears and things like that. And ultimately, it's like we're covered in the blood, and we can be called to pray. But also in the same breath, like, there are demons around these practices, right? And right. So you could deal with some kind of spiritual attack. However, we're covered in the blood, right? I mean, We're on this time, in this time of imperfection, we're on this side of the veil where there's a lot that we just don't understand. But in the same breath, like, we just need to be confident in Christ and pray and be prayerful and prayer-minded and also be in alignment through prayer with where God is calling us to focus. Because I do think that people are called into different areas, mm-hmm. different lanes, so to speak, right. And that's their lane, so they can focus on that. So I know that that's kind of a circular maybe way of answering that question, but I do think that it kind of comes down situation to situation, but it's important for us to answer you directly, like, think about, like, what does that even mean, like, inviting the demonic? It can mean a lot of different things, but obviously my arena or my lane is to talk specifically about the New Age and the occult. So,
okay.
You know, obviously occult practices, they do invite the demonic, but I think when we get into the larger conversation with Christians in general and they're like, well, what if this invites the demonic? What if that invites the demonic? The danger in that is you can kind of get into this scrupulosity or hyper-focus on the paranormal or the demonic. And what that can actually do is lead a person into fascination with the paranormal, fascination with the preternatural, and that it can actually move you into a place where you actually are inviting it, which would be evocation or calling something forth. And I've actually seen this in deliverance ministry. I've worked for a few years with exorcists in deliverance ministry. I was a case manager for a few different dioceses. And sometimes you would have a situation where Christians would get a little bit too interested in whatever was going on, and so it would kind of increase the demonic issue. So my response to that is people just need to remain focused on Christ, because unfortunately these topics do draw interest in the demonic,
right.
And really my ministry is a ministry of compassion for the afflicted and helping to point them toward Christ. It's about leading them into proper spiritual formation so that they can get completely freed of these things and they can learn how to walk with Jesus in a way that is life-giving and fruitful and leads them toward the gifts of the Spirit and salvation and away from this these demonic threads.
Very good. In case our guest just joined us, our guest today is Teresa Llaneros, and the book we're talking about is Freedom from Darkness, A Roadmap of Deliverance from Spiritual Bondage and the Occult, published by Sophia Institute. If I'm not mistaken, it just became available to the public yesterday. Is that right?
Yep. It is available as of now.
So you can pick it up at sophiainstitute.com here in the Philadelphia area. You can always check out the St. Jude Shop over in Havertown. If you're going to trek a ways to get there, I'd suggest you give them a call first and make sure they have it in stock. And if not, they have a bunch of Sophia's books there. They can get it for you in short order. So you yourself obviously went through this process. And, you know, we were talking in my previous show about the gift that we have to be able to look back at our past and, you know, look for opportunities where, you know, where God wanted us to do something and we either did it or didn't do it. And, you know, we don't want to dwell on the past, but obviously it gives us an opportunity to avoid doing the things that caused harm and look for, you know, places where God really did play a role in our life. And so, you know, it seems like the book came about as a result of, you know, things that went on in your own life and that you had to look back on as you created the ministry.
Yeah, so this is kind of interesting because, like, I wrote this book based on about 6 years worth of my research and getting out of it myself, but then also what I was building as far as the framework for helping other people get out of it. And so it was interesting, actually, when I was writing the book, I didn't actually want to put any of my testimony in the book. And through multiple people that were mentoring me, they were like, no, Teresa, you really need to go ahead and add your testimony in here. And I was like uncomfortable about that. Mm-hmm. But so I ended up what I did. I'm glad I did because, you know, they were right. People do like to hear testimony. I basically tacked it on at the end of each chapter as sort of like myself as a case study, so to speak.
Sure.
But ultimately, the book that I wrote is really taking distilled wisdom that I had over years of going through the process of deliverance myself, but then coming out on the other side and working with other people. And it was interesting. I was talking to one of my students today, and we were reminiscing on just the last few years of this process of when I launched my academy to help people out of it. And the first cohort of, they were all women, that were coming out of the New Age and the occult around the same time. Like, they were all kind of at different stages, but they had all left the occult. Some of them were at the stage of even possession, trying to get freed of it. Some of them had been out of it for a few years. But it was fascinating to walk with them through the process I created based on how I got out myself. And a lot of it was theological grounding. A lot of it was a system that I created called Dismantling Occult Anchors, which actually helps to reform a person's worldview and dismantle these worldviews that they are clinging to that are incorrect, first of all, second of all, destructive, and third of all, create footholds for the enemy. And so there's a pretty intense process that they go through in order to reform their worldview. And then at the end, they learn how to actually share their testimony. And so over the years of working with people and talking to people and interviewing people from all over the world going through this, and then going into deliverance ministry, working with exorcists, coming out, working with people coming out of the occult and various things, and then getting invited to Rome to take the course on exorcism with Roman Catholic exorcists from all over the world, I found that there is such a drastic need for the ministry that I run, because this work has not really, from what I've seen, been done as with such specificity and clarity as I'm bringing to this. And this is not like tooting my own horn here. This would not exist if it weren't all of the people that have come around me that I've been able to work with over the years to compile this massive amount of data into one place. So it's really just been a work of the Spirit, really. And it's been, I'm really glad that the book's out now, and I'm excited to see being able to reach people on a larger level. Because you mentioned Monsignor Stephen Rossetti. I've had him on my YouTube channel as well, and I interviewed him, and it was interesting because a lot of the women that ended up finding me were actually searching for stuff about exorcism and deliverance online because of what they were going through. And so it's through some of those keywords that they've been able to find the ministry, Spirit Sanctified, and be able to work with me and get the help that they need. And so ultimately, all of these things considered, it's like this information needs to get out there on a larger scale because the priests are overrun and this issue is growing. And because of the numbers that we're looking at here with the spiritual but not religious group growing, like, we need to be ready to approach these people as Catholics. We don't need to look down on them. I'm tired of this scarlet letter thing, people not knowing how to treat people, people disrespecting them. They need help, and they need to be taken seriously, and they need to be advocated for. And I find that there's a large gap on the parish level and up with respect to this particular demographic.
Now, I can see it, and it's probably, you know, part of it obviously is ignorance. The other part, I think, is just the when you talk about New Age or the occult, you know, people go back to Salem and witches and that type of thing, and not knowing how to deal with it. It's not something that our priests talk about from the pulpit. It's, as far as I know, I mean, there's some books out there about it, but it's not out there in the forefront. And we only had a minute to talk before we went live, and I mentioned a friend of mine that's in a deliverance ministry and trying to help people. And for the most part, I think there's the official exorcists that get their training in Rome, but the pastor at your local parish probably has no clue as to how to work with somebody that knocks on the door and says, "Hey, I've been dabbling in this stuff, and it's taken over my life, and I don't know how to get out."
You're exactly right, and that's what I found when I started to work with exorcists, and there were people coming in that needed this particular kind of help. It was like they really needed the spiritual formation part, and it's very specific spiritual formation. This isn't just send them to OCIA and some normal, regular catechesis program. They need very specific training and understanding of theology in order to get them freed of these belief systems that are not only pervasive and complex, but you then also have the demonic issue. And what I found was that when I entered into working with clergy, they needed a lot of help in understanding not only what these things are, but how to actually minister to people. And so I found myself on phone call after phone call with priest after priest because they had a litany of questions on how to really be able to respond to not only the people that are afflicted, but their families.
Sure.
It's a pretty big issue, and it is growing, like I keep saying. I feel like a broken record, but
nah.
I appreciate that you're bringing up the clergy side, because they need support too. It's not just the afflicted that need help. The clergy need help in order to help the afflicted.
Yeah, and I know that Philadelphia is not unique with you know, the lack of vocations. You know, we have far more priests dying each year than we're ordaining, and to expect them to be able to you know, run a parish and be able to do this is a stretch. And I think that that's where, you know, not only in the work that you're doing, but other things that the church should provide is going to have to be taken on by the laity. So I applaud you for, you know, for the work that you're doing, and the probably the relief that you're going to bring to so many clergy, because if they allow, you know, the laity to help with it, it'll take some of that burden off.
Absolutely. You put that really well, and that's exactly my goal with this. It's like, I wish I had this book when I was leaving the occult, and I'm excited to get in the hands of the people who need it, because it's going to give them what they need, those foundations and that awareness and grounding into what's going on with them and how to get out of it. So that's going to alleviate not only the burden from them, but also this book is going to be useful for any lay groups that are running any kind of ministry where they really need to be prepared to respond. And so, like you said, it's going to equip the laity that are helping. And so it's just, I think, going to, I really hope this makes a splash, because I do think it's going to lift a lot of the work from the burden of the clergy that already have so many of the burdens. And it ultimately puts the responsibility on the person who's getting out of the situation that they put themselves in. You know, I'm reticent to use the word victim sometimes, because what it does is it takes the onus of responsibility off of the person who really needs to be taking radical responsibility for their own actions, so that they can understand moral culpability and they can understand contrition, and that they can start to do that actual inner healing work that they need in order to protect themselves from these belief systems.
Yeah. You had mentioned early on that you had a number of individuals that had contacted you to try to get help. And one of the questions that came to mind was, the people that go down this path and end up involved in the occult, do they tend to be and stay within themselves? Or, you know, some people, you know, myself included at times, you know, picture a coven and or something, you know, where there's groups of people in the occult and they get together and they do these things. Or is it more, you know, people that are doing it, they find out about it individually, especially with the internet, like you said, they can go to TikTok or YouTube or anywhere else and learn the practices. Do they tend to continue to work on this themselves as individuals, or do they get involved in groups?
So this is really, I love this question. It's something I think about a lot. So there is a very large draw to what I refer to as like online cults. There are so many out there that people get tripped up into. Like, let's use TikTok as an example, because I knew you brought that up a couple times. Like, a person can go get some education on the New Age or the occult through TikTok, and what they're going to find is like a person on TikTok that has a lot of followers, and so they start to follow this cult of personality, and then they learn that they have a community, and so then they find friends, and then they make friends in this group, and they're all engaging in the same occult practice. And so you have these separate little tiny subcultures that are actually not that tiny anymore. But what makes that so difficult as far as like the ministry side is because they all have their different lexicons. They all use different language. And so when they, you know, come out of that, or they're coming to Christianity, they come into the churches, and they're basically speaking another language that nobody understands, the Christians are going to go, this person, like, I don't know how to help them, you know? Mm. And so because there's so much language and it's growing and changing and morphing as people create a brand new practice, because they're going to brand it differently because they want it to be something novel or different or interesting, there's a whole zeitgeist here, and there's the shifting sands in culture that are growing and changing so fast, especially with TikTok now surpassing YouTube as the greatest place where most of the people are getting their information, and they're going to, and they're scrolling on their phones, and they're spending so much time every day on this app. It's like we are dealing with that issue. Now, to answer your question directly, I see a healthy amount of, or an unhealthy amount of both, where I work with people that come out of cults and they're occult cults, right? So they're cults engaging in witchcraft. And so you have to help them on the front of closing doors, and then also, because it's a lot of like interpersonal stuff. And so that's hard. It's hard to go through. I came out of a cult. So that's on one side. But then I have worked with people that have gone online to find something that's going to help them heal. Like there's a lot of occult practices around healing. And I can give one particular example. There was a woman who, she was having a knee problem. And so she went on Amazon and she got this pendulum to help with quote unquote healing. And for those of you who don't know, a pendulum is essentially like a crystal that dangles from a chain, and it can be used for different occult practices like Reiki and other sort of energy healing practices. And so this woman gets this pendulum and she looks at how to use it. And so she starts to use this pendulum, and within a week she is fully possessed. She was high up at a company and she was giving a talk, a presentation. And the demon took over her, and her voice changed. She went rigid. She starts speaking in another language, freaked everybody out. She ends up losing her job over this. And like the whole, you know, her whole life imploded because of this demonic possession that happened because she went online and got this pendulum. So that would be an example, like you're talking about, of like a situation where she wasn't in a particular cult with a group of people, but she did a practice on her own. Mm-hmm. And because she was raised by an occultist, what I've seen there is like she already had that worldview already there. She probably had some kind of family system of demonics going on, but she is now living her life for Christ, loving the Lord, running a ministry. So she's doing okay now. But that's just to give a couple of different examples of how I see that play out.
Now, it's really complicated. It's almost like you're a physician in the world of medicine and trying to discern what the symptoms are in order to further discern how it is that you're going to bring them back from wherever they have ended up. It is certainly not simple. And I can promise you that there's not too many priests that I know that would be willing to spend as much time as it takes to learn all this. So thank God for what you're doing and being able to help people.
Absolutely. Well, and another thing that I want to bring up with this is when people are coming out of the occult, there's a lot of help that they need. And I always recommend step one, they really need to talk to someone that they trust, because a lot of times they're really isolated. So if there's anyone in their family or friend group that they can really trust, go there first, and then they also need to really look into therapy, because there's so much wrapped up in this. A lot of people get involved in the occult after having a significant amount of trauma in their lives. And so there's a lot going on here that they're going to need help with. And so that's another point that I want to make. And part of this, too, is that they should be seeking empirically validated cognitive behavioral psychotherapy with a licensed psychologist, and then also seeking after proper Christian spiritual direction with someone that actually understands how it feels coming out of the occult. And there are people that, you know, you can find online. And for people listening that are thinking that they might need help with this, you can go to spiritsanctified.com. I have a litany of resources on there to help with that. And then you can also call your diocesan office and ask them if there's someone that you can speak with for help.
Very good. The first half hour has already blown by. Our guest today is Teresa Yanaris, and the book we're talking about in our ministry, Freedom from Darkness, A Roadmap of Deliverance from Spiritual Bondage and the Occult. It's published by Sophia Institute. Just publicly released yesterday, the 21st, available at sophiainstitute.com. And here in the local Philadelphia area, check out our friends at the St. Jude Shop in Havertown and grab it there before you go to a big box place to get it. Teresa, we're going to take a short break, give you a chance to wet your whistle for our listeners. We're going to continue the conversation on the other side. Please don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is Linda Purcell. I listen to In His Sign Catholic Radio every chance I get. Kathleen convicts me with the words of our Lord. Kathleen lives in His love, and for me, just the opportunity to listen to her is my road to Emmaus. My heart is burning for our Lord Jesus. I am set on fire each time I tune in to In His Sign Catholic Radio. Why don't you give it a try, too?
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We often think of the scripture where the disciples were walking to Emmaus, where they said, "Were not our hearts burning within us as Jesus spoke to us on the road?" As we travel along the road together in our Archdiocese of Philadelphia and Camden Diocese, we thank God for our loyal circle of family and friends. Please consider sponsoring one of our new programs in the name of your parish priest, family member, or friend. It would be a beautiful way of helping us to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ, our risen Lord. Give us a call at 610-527-2906 or visit us on the web at inhissign.com.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. Your host, Ken Johnston, and I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, all those that are listening live and those that will listen to the recordings, whether it's through our website at inhissign.com or my Substack account, notsaintsyet.substack.com. You can always, if you miss any part of a show, you can always go back and listen. And I have a feeling, Teresa, that this is one that's going to get listened to quite often, and probably people listen to it more than once, just because of, you know, what's going on in the world today. And I think that this is going on a lot more than people suspect within their families. And if it is going on, is there a way to, like, are there any shows, if you're playing poker, you know, you're looking for a show, somebody that's going to somehow or other let you know what they have. But is there a show that lets you know that they may be involved with somebody that's headed down this path or maybe even far down the path?
I think so. I have so many resources. I'm kind of going through my Rolodex here. But I think if you go to my YouTube channel, Teresa Yanaris Official, and go to the Faith Under Fire series, which is a recent series that I've been doing. It's talking about the New Age and the occult and how it brings the Catholic faith under fire. I think it's really good education to help people understand what these things are. And that's really the reality here, is that I think and you've referred to this a few times, there's so much confusion around these practices themselves that I really have a heart to educate on what these things are, because it helps you be able to minister to people better. And so I want to take a moment to talk about something that I think will be useful in this moment for this exact topic. So there's a system that I created called occult anchoring, and it's essentially the term I use to describe when a person gets into the occult. There's usually something that happens in their story that snaps them into an interest in the occult. So if you're looking around your friend group, let's say you have someone you're kind of worried about, if you look at their story and you see like some particular thing come up and you're like, oh, okay, that's when they got into fill in the blank, whatever it was, like if it was tarot cards or name it. There are so many different things now that people get involved in. Reiki is another big one, yoga. And when you start to understand what that particular thing was, then you can see, well, how did they start acting after that? Because usually what happens with occult anchoring, there's that moment that they snap into an interest because they think something worked. So that's why I always say beware of what works, because what essentially happens is a person will assign meaning and value to something that happens around the occult. And so now there's a belief attached to the lie. And that's why people start to believe in occult practices. They start to believe that there's some utility in these beliefs and practices. And so for people on the other side of it, when they have someone that maybe they're worried about, and let's say that they're getting into the occult, the problem is when a person has gone through occult snapping and now they're motivated to go deeper into the beliefs and practices, at that point in their journey, it's pretty hard to try to pull them out of it. And I know that people don't like to hear that, but in my research and working with people and getting a lot of stories from across the board, this is why I created what's called the Deliverance Roadmap. And this I go over in my book extensively. And it's essentially 10 steps that captures the journey into bondage and out of bondage. So you have 5 steps of a person getting deeper into this belief system, and then the 5 steps as they're coming out. And this is helpful for anyone that maybe has someone in their life that they're worried about, because they can assess where in the journey is this person, right? Mm-hmm. And so the reason why that's useful is because if you get clear on what these things are and you're prepared, there's a point in a person's journey where their worldview is more susceptible to being destabilized out of these belief systems. And if you're prepared and you've been walking along with them, you haven't been judgmental, you've been praying for them, but you've been standing firm with boundaries in your faith with your beliefs, they might be more inclined to come to you when the cracks begin to show in their false belief system, because the occult is based, it's built on falsity. So it's like a deck of cards that can fall. These lies are very contradictory within each other. And I go over this in the Faith Under Fire series. So when a person is functioning inside of an occult worldview, there might be something that will happen that will trigger this crack in their worldview, which creates it creates a fracture, like a window. And there's like now a little crack in that window. Mm-hmm. But the occult, once you crack that window, once something happens there, it shatters pretty quickly. Because in order for these lies that are usually contradictory to hold up, once one of those falls, the rest of them will fall too. So for those of us on the other side of it that are here praying for people to come out of these belief systems, I say pray and just be prepared for that moment. Mm-hmm. And be receptive, because when a person starts to have those walls come down, you can really play a beautiful role in helping to lead them to Christ when the time is right.
So in some ways, it sounds like the recovery world, and the same thing that I'll tell people that have sons, daughters, grandkids that are involved with alcohol or drugs is, you know, we're looking for that moment of grace. In your case, it's that when the window cracks, and what I tell them is there's going to come a time where, you know, God's going to give them that grace. And I think the same thing happens perhaps when that window cracks. It's God somehow or other getting in there to give them that moment. And then hopefully they seize that moment and can turn their lives around. And so the crack happens, the window starts to shatter. Hopefully you've not gone too far out of your way to distance them so that they won't come to you. When they do come and they say, hey, I think I'm mixed up in something that I shouldn't be, that's when they turn to you, right? And is there something, though, that the individual can do other than saying, hey, I heard about this book or I heard about this website?
Absolutely. My point in my ministry is actually to equip people to be able to talk about these things.
Right.
So my hope is that, and I've already seen it work. It's beautiful to watch this work, but I don't keep this stuff close to the chest. I want to educate so that people are able to talk about these things. So going to spiritsanctified.com, reading the book, and, you know, all the stuff I have on my YouTube channel, all of that it serves as an equipping so that people have these definitions at a base level, and then they're able to enter into these conversations with clarity. Because the thing about it is, if you don't really know what you're talking about, and then a person in the occult comes to you, they're going to be able to identify pretty quickly you don't know what you're talking about, and then they're going to tune you out.
Yep.
And so it's really important for us as Christians to be able to meet people where they are. And at a base level, you have to be super compassionate. Like, they're already coming from a standpoint that Christians are unenlightened. Unfortunately, that's just what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so there has to be this leading with love. And that is going to set the foundation for any successful conversation at all.
Very good. So in the book, I think you've called it there's the path into the occult, and then you have the path to freedom. And so once they recognize that, you know, things may not be what they thought they were, and they start to seek help, there's a process that they'll now go through that you lay out, maybe just, you know, highlight it a bit to let folks know.
Yeah, basically. So when you have what we're calling, we call it the gig is up moment, or that moment that destabilizes the worldview or starts to crash that mirror to the ground, I've noticed that in some people's stories, they're going to have what I call the in-between. And this is the time between the gig is up moment and them actually turning to Christ. So let me give an example. Let's say a person they weren't raised Christian and they don't have any Christians around them. They could have a gig is up moment, or they could go, okay, maybe an occult practice scared them. And so they're like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. That scared me. I think there's something wrong with these practices. They don't exactly know that Jesus is the only one that can save them from the demonic situation they've got themselves in now. And so they might fumble around in what I call the in-between for a little bit, where they're looking to the world to give them some form of answers, but they're still avoiding Jesus, which is actually the answer. And so I find that some people in this area can start clinging to conspiracy media because they think that, you know, I'm a truth seeker, I want the truth, I see this isn't the truth now, where's the truth? And so they get into conspiracy media, and then they find, okay, well, that's not really giving me the answer either. And then at some point, they will have an encounter. And so this is what I call the Colossians 1 moment. And this is where they actually take an action. They choose Christ, and what is inside of that is like tangible, real action to start following Jesus. And then they enter what I call the woods, because usually when an occultist is now an ex-occultist and they're trying to get out of these belief systems, this is where, if they have demonic attachments at this point, the demons are going to get pretty scary. They could have bruises on their body. They could just really suffer a lot mentally and emotionally as they're trying to get out. And so in the woods is where they're really needing to surrender to Christ and persevere. And this is where I point people toward theological education and the sacraments and joining community. And then once they kind of go through this deeper surrender and they're getting their sea legs, so to speak, they'll re-enter society, and this is what I call entering the world. And once you enter the world again after leaving the occult, what can happen is you're actually not received very well. When you enter the churches, you're treated kind of poorly. There might be even persecution around you from people that are against what you believe. I've actually seen this in prison ministry. I went to some academic talks around prison ministry, and I noticed that there are quite a lot of parallels, actually, in people coming out of the occult and coming out of prisons and entering churches. And I imagine with your background in working with people coming out of addiction, they probably experience somewhat of the same persecution and things like that. And so I find it really critical in approaching a topic like this to be responsible in tackling the concept of Christian persecution, even by Christians, but non-Christians too, but kind of the attitude that you really got to keep your boundaries up and be very intentional and discerning when you enter back into the world, into society, you're going into the churches and things like that. And then finally, we land at the calling. What I find is a lot of people that come out of these belief systems, at some point, they're going to be freed, and then they feel more clear on a lot of different fronts, and they're ready to start living that path where God will call them to use their gifts for the world. And that's what all Christians are called to do, is leaning into our lives, into our lanes to help build up the kingdom.
So the path that you've laid out for us is heavily Christian and Catholic. You talk about the, you know, theology and the sacraments, and there's probably people out there that, you know, may not, and not Catholics or Christians, but those that, you know, the same group that are more likely to get involved in this stuff because they don't have the Christian worldview, that this is the path we see because, and I think, is it because of the demonic that's involved and because Christ is the answer to the demonic? And is there a are there secular, for lack of a better word, people or organizations that are trying to do the same thing but can't quite get people there because they don't have what you have, what we have in our church with the sacraments?
I think I'm a little confused on your question. I guess where I'm getting hung up is, are you saying that you think that people without a Christian foundation are more likely to getting involved in the cult in the first place, or you're saying that they're less likely to get delivered from it?
So somebody that's involved in the occult, chances are they got there because whether they had a Christian upbringing or not, but have turned away from God or never had God. And now their only answer is the only answer with God. Are there secular organizations or individuals that are trying to help these folks, but they can't get them where they need to be because we believe that they need Jesus Christ, that he is the only answer?
Well, secular folks wouldn't, I don't think, really identify these issues as demonic in nature in the first place.
Okay.
So you can kind of go into the realm of humanism.
Gotcha.
But unfortunately, what I see is when, this is actually pretty common, when an occultist realizes they have a spiritual issue, let's say that they're dealing with demonic obsession, vexation, or possession, if they're really resistant to Christianity, you know what they're going to do? They're going to actually go to other occultists to try to help them with that spiritual issue, and they end up worse off than before.
Oh, gotcha.
So that's on one side. But then I think also that kind of concept of the in-between that we were talking about earlier, yeah. I think that's sort of like, I guess, probably what you're talking about here, like just basically getting trapped in the in-between where they're just looking to the world for salvation and not finding it. But I do believe that, you know, God has a plan for us, and I think that I've seen plenty of beautiful success stories, so I think it's important to, you know, pray for these people that are lost. And I think that the more we put out good, solid, theologically sound information that can stand the test of all of these false belief systems, it's going to get louder and louder to where people will start to look at it, is what I believe.
That's awesome. Again, our guest today is Teresa Yanaris. The book we're talking about is Freedom from Darkness, A Roadmap to Deliverance from Spiritual Bondage and the Occult, published by Sophia Institute, just became publicly available yesterday. And the website one more time, Teresa?
SpiritSanctified.com for resources and courses and things like that. And then for the book, it's SophiaInstitute.com/freedom.
Very good. We've managed to take up 50 minutes already, and I've asked the questions that were on my mind, and wondering if there's anything left that you want to cover before we have to part ways.
I think the main thing coming up for me right now is I really appreciate the way that you handled this interview. I can tell that you have clarity and awareness over these topics, so I just want to say thank you for not only having the awareness that you have, but just handling this topic responsibly, which really means a lot to me as an advocate for the afflicted.
Like I said, I know somebody that's trying to help some folks. I don't know how many of them were actually involved with the occult, and I'm sure whether he listen now or listen later, we'll have that conversation. But now I see it, and I think that we have our heads in the sand if we don't believe that this is becoming more and more prominent around the world, and and especially right here. And sometimes we don't talk about it seriously, and I think that's why. Until you know somebody that's either been impacted or is in it, it's real easy to shrug it off, but. I love the way that you come at this with a Christian Catholic response, and that Jesus Christ is the answer. Sooner or later, I think everybody's going to know that. It may take a few more years. I don't know how soon he's going to come and let us all know. I know a bunch of people that are praying that it happens sooner rather than later. But in the meantime, you know, we do whatever we can. And I think the point that you made more than once is that regardless of whether it's the occult or anything else, that we need to love folks. and to try to understand where it is that they're coming from. Like I said, my background, you know, in recovery, it's real easy for people to shrug off the addict and say, you know, they brought all this on themselves. But that doesn't do anybody any good. It's, you know, how do we help people get to where they need to be and to open their hearts and minds to Jesus so that he can do what he does best and bring them back to him. So,
amen. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Very good. Teresa, it's been a pleasure to have you. I may be in touch again in the not-too-distant future, especially if I've got some friends that are interested in getting in touch with you. And, you know, thanks for all that you've done and putting yourself out there. There's probably a lot of people that come out of this, and I don't know, with shame or guilt, and to let the world know that you've had the personal experience. And that's why you're an authority. You know, same thing happens in the recovery world. People can see right through you if you've never been an alcoholic or a drug addict or a gambler or whatever it was that you're addicted to. And that's why family members often struggle to help their family members that are struggling. But because you've
been
through it.
We're just all helping each other further along.
Amen. Amen. But because you've been through it, you not only talk the talk, but walk the walk. So thanks so much for being here today. I certainly appreciate it. And God bless you in all the work that you're doing. Thank you.
Likewise, Ken. Back at you.
All righty. Be good. Take care.
Okay. Take care.
It's funny. You talk to some individuals, and in all honesty, we swapped an email yesterday. I had an opportunity to talk with Teresa for about 30 seconds before we went live, and, you know, we part ways, and I feel like I've known her for a lot longer than that. And it's just the way, again, that God connects these dots. He puts us together oftentimes with people that we don't ever anticipate that we'll be in the presence of or get to be friends with or what have you. And sometimes those connections last for, you know, a minute. Sometimes they last for 52 minutes. Sometimes they last a lifetime. But we need we take a step back and look at the things that happen in our life day in and day out. And it becomes pretty clear that there's some force at work here, and that force is God. That force is Jesus Christ. And all he wants is for us to come back to him. You know, we've all got that yearning. We've all got that desire, whether it's for joy or ecstasy, whatever it is. But it's placed there by God, and he's the only one that's going to fulfill it. He does that by design. He's done it since he created Adam and Eve back in the garden, and he made their one and only desire for him, and they lived that way for quite a while. And here we are centuries and centuries later, and each of us still born with that exact same desire for God, and yet we try to find that joy in sometimes everything but God. And you know, sometimes we have extreme examples. People, you know, end up in the occult, end up in various forms of addiction. And, you know, but I truly believe that they're all looking for God. And in the Saints and Sinners show, I think, do I still have it here? I probably lost the page. But it was in talking about in St. Francis de Sales. And he had written a treatise on love, and he got it here. Here it is. In the wonderful treatise on the love of God, he wrote, "The measure of love is to love without measure." And that can be hard. Brothers and sisters, that can be hard. Oftentimes, people will wrong us, whether it was, you know, they did it when they were drunk or high, whether they did it when they were doing something because of their involvement with the occult or New Age. And oftentimes, you know, they'll say if and when they straighten up and, you know, enter into recovery, go through the process to get out of the whatever occult it is that they belong to, You know, they often say that, you know, had they not been doing what they were doing, they wouldn't have hurt us the way that they did. That was never their intention. I know that was never my intention, the people that I hurt over the years. You know, I never set out, never woke up in the morning and said, you know, they wrote out a list of people that I was going to hurt that day. It was, you know, in my own mind, the only person I was hurting was myself. You know, everybody else, you know, they were fine. It was me that was getting hurt, that victim attitude, I guess. And so regardless of where the folks are in our lives, whether they're friends, family, what have you, that they're in their own struggle. And, you know, Teresa used the word boundaries, that we set boundaries and we don't let them inflict harm on us because of the actions that they're taking. And we can put up those walls and try to prevent that from happening. I think we can't always do it emotionally, especially if it's someone that we love and we watch them, you know, slowly destroying themselves by doing whatever it is that they're doing. But we can still love them. We can certainly continue to pray for them and just pray for that moment of clarity. And I think that this is where, you know, knowing the resources that are available before the person comes to ask for help is important. If you know somebody that's struggling with alcohol or drugs, you may want to find somebody that you probably already know that had struggled with it in their past. I've had that happen. You know, friends, neighbors, people that are aware of my things that have gone on in my life. When they have a family member that finally asks for help, I may get the call, or somebody else, you know, that's in recovery may get the call. I think with this one, it's relatively newer as far as being able to help. Sometimes people will go right to an exorcist. That's not always a viable option, especially today. But if you know somebody or have an idea that somebody you know may be involved in the occult, I think Teresa's got the answer. And I encourage you to go ahead and pick up the book. And if not the book, certainly her websites. Again, it's Teresa Yanaris, and the last name is spelled Y-A-N-A-R-O-S, Yanaris. So once again, another Wednesday has flown by. You know, it's interesting to me that, you know, the time we spend preparing for the shows, and then we get here and sometimes we get to what it is that we thought we needed to get to, and other times God sees fit to alter those. And thank God for the idea that Father McKay's implanted in me, that my disappointments are divine appointments. So hopefully this has been 2 hours of a spirit-filled show, and that the Spirit has directed the course of it. I feel like it has today. I've learned a whole lot, and I hope you have too. And we'll keep doing it on Wednesdays. So look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. It'll be Divine Will Wednesday. Peter DePommel will be back in February. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be Shrine February. We're going to have guests from all the shrines here in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. So please continue to join me on Wednesdays. Until next week, I pray that God will hold you in the palm of his hand. Take care and God bless.